Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 1, including 46 verses, is entitled Observing the Armies on the Battlefield of Kurukshetra. In verses 1 through 6, we will hear an assessment of the Pandavas by Duryodhana. Please listen. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjay, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? So the scene is that this is a fratricidal war about to take place. Two families, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, are about to engage in a war which will determine who will rule the earth. The Kauravas are headed by Duryodhana, and the Pandavas, headed by Arjuna, are on the other side. Dhritarashtra is blind, his secretary is Sanjaya, and although they are not directly present on the battlefield, but are situated some distance away, Sanjaya, by means of mystic television, he has the ability to see in his heart what is going on the battlefield. And this will be revealed later on. It's all due to the grace of his guru, Vyasadeva. So Sanjaya is viewing the actual events by this mystic vision in his heart and is relating everything to his master Dhritarashtra, who is blind. Sanjaya said, O king, after looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher, Dronacharya, and spoke the following words. Duryodhana said, O my teacher, behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Drupada, known as Drishtadyumna. So this Drishtadyumna was the son of Dronacharya's enemy. There was a quarrel between Dronacharya and King Drupad, and therefore King Drupad begot a son who would be able to kill Dronacharya. And yet, Dronacharya, being a very advanced transcendentalist, a brahmana, he did not hesitate to instruct this particular son, even though he knew that this son would be the cause of his death. And that's why Duryodhana is speaking in this way to his Dronacharya teacher. Here in this army are many heroic bowmen equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna. Great fighters like Yuyudhan, Virata, and Drupad. There are also great heroic powerful fighters like Dhrishtaketu, Chaikitana, Kashiraj, Purujit, Kuntibhoja, and Shaibya. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamauja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. So after giving an assessment of the other side, now Duryodhana, he will give an assessment of his side, the Kurus. But for your information, O best of the Brahmins, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. There are personalities like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta called Bhurishriva. And they are always victorious in battle. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. Now that's very significant. Because although Duryodhana is very confident that he will come out victorious, actually, It appears that the goddess of fortune is speaking through his own words, because indeed, all of these people will lay down their lives for his sake, himself included, as the outcome of this battle will be that Arjuna and his brothers, headed by Yudhishthira, will come out victorious by the plan and order of Sri Krishna. Duryodhan continues, all of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. Our strength is immeasurable, and we are perfectly protected by Grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bheem, is limited. So it is true, Bhishma Dev was the most valiant, most powerful warrior. So Duryodhana's assessment from the materialistic conception or point of view is well ascertained. Now listen. All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. Duryodhana is quite the politician, because although Bhishma Dev is the greatest warrior on the battlefield, still he is advanced in age. So Duryodhana wants to make sure that all the other warriors give full protection. Sanjaya said, then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhana joy. After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. In this next section, verses 14 through 19, we will see how the Pandavas respond by blowing their conch shells. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. So Sanjaya, in reporting to Dhritarashtra, did not say that the conch shells blown by Bhishma and his party, the Kauravas, were transcendental. But he did say that the conch shells blown by Krishna and Arjuna was transcendental. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta. And Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Paundra. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay. And Nakul and Sahadev blew the Sughosh and Manipushpaka. The great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikandi, Drishtadyumna, Virat, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupad, the sons of Draupadi, and many others, O king, such as the mighty-armed son of Subhadra, they all blew their respective conch shells. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. So this is significant. The shattering of the hearts indicates that the Pandavas, they will come out victorious. There's no mention by Sanjaya that when Bhishma and the Kurus blew their conch shells, that it shattered the hearts of the Pandavas. Therefore, early indications show that Krishna, by his desire, by his will, the Pandavas would come out victorious. Now, in the next section, Arjuna will survey the scene. Keep in mind that this is the first day of the battle. The battle was to last for 18 days. Sanjaya now continues to narrate to Dhritarashtra. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra, drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Significant is that Arjuna's chariot has the flag of Hanuman. Krishna previously took the form of Lord Ram, and with the help of Hanuman, Lord Ram defeated the evil Ravan. So now Ram was again present as the form of Krishna, and Hanuman is there on the flag. This is another sign that their side, Arjuna's side, will be victorious. Arjuna said, O Achyuta, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here, those who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra, known as Duryodhana. And it's a fact, Duryodhana was offense personified. For so many years and so many incidents, Duryodhana so cunningly, so evilly, did so many things against the Pandavas. Why? Because Duryodhana wanted to be king. But Krishna, he wanted Yudhishthira to be king. And that is why this whole Bhagavad Gita is being spoken. And that's why this whole battle of Kurukshetra is about to take place. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharat Dhritarashtra, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. Now keep in mind, Krishna is God. Yet it is interesting that he has agreed to be the chariot driver of his devotee Arjuna. Krishna promised even before the battle that he would not take part in the battle. He would not pick up a weapon. And so he is simply the chariot driver, and therefore he is glorified by the name Parthasarathi. God sometimes, for the pleasure of his pure devotee, will take a submissive or subordinate role just to please his devotee, and at the same time, the Lord derives pleasure in such activities. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. By such a statement, it appears that Krishna can foresee what is about to take place in the mind and heart of Arjuna. There Arjuna could see, within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and other well-wishers. Now in this next section, verses 27 through 38, Arjuna will give reasons why he does not want to fight this battle. When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke as follows. Arjuna said, My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. My whole body is trembling and my hair is standing on end. My bow, Gandiva, is slipping from my hand. My skin is burning. I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself. My mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Keshava, killer of the Rikishi demon. I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen in this battle. Nor can I, my dear Krishna, desire any subsequent victory, kingdom, or happiness. O Govinda, of what avail to us are a kingdom, happiness, or even life itself, when all those for whom we may desire them are now arrayed on this battlefield? O Madhusudana, when teachers, friends, sons, grandfathers, maternal uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law, and other relatives are ready to give up their lives and property and standing before me, why should I wish to kill them, even though they might otherwise kill me? O Janardan, maintainer of all living entities, I am not prepared to fight with them, even in exchange for all the three worlds, let alone this earth. What pleasure will we derive by killing the sons of Dhritarashtra? After all, sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra. What should we gain? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? O Janardan, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? So it is apparent that Arjuna is beset with divine saintly qualities, and Krishna will confirm this later on in chapter 16. Notice how Arjuna very conscientiously is giving very good moral arguments why he doesn't want to fight this battle. And it's because he has the natural soft-heartedness of compassion, which are symptoms of a great devotee. So Arjuna is known as a Rajarshi. He is a warrior, a statesman, but at the same time, he's on the level of a saint. He's not like the Kauravas, headed by Duryodhan. He would rather let them have the kingdom. He would rather not fight on moral grounds, at least moral grounds from his angle of vision. Now, in the next section, Arjuna's arguments continue, but from a different angle of vision. Arjuna continues, with the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood comes unwanted progeny. When there is an increase of unwanted population, certainly this causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down, because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. And by the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition, thus giving rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. O Janardan, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplic succession that those who destroy family traditions dwell always in hell. This concept of disciplic succession is a fundamental principle of Vedic culture. Vedic culture believes that knowledge descends from the higher authorities. In Western tradition, Man is encouraged to seek out knowledge by means of one's own sense perception and experiment and observation. But in Vedic culture, the knowledge is said to be descending from God, the perfect source, and then coming down to human society by a chain of spiritual master and disciple. So Arjuna refers to this when he says, I have heard by disciplic succession. Means he has heard it from his teacher, he has heard it in the scriptures. Alas, how strange it is that we are preparing to commit greatly sinful acts, driven by the desire to enjoy royal happiness. We are intent on killing our own kinsmen. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, with weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. So just see Arjuna's state of mind. In the next chapter, we will see what Krishna thinks of Arjuna's present state of mind. Sanjaya said, Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows, sat down on his chariot, with his mind overwhelmed with grief. So this sets the scene of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had asked Krishna to take his chariot so that he could see who has assembled here on day one of the battle. And when Krishna said, Behold, the Kurus, Arjuna saw and he became overwhelmed by compassion. And from two different angles of vision, he has given very good reasons, at least seemingly good reasons, why he does not want to fight. But as Bhagavad Gita progresses, we will see over and over again, Krishna will repeat the same message. Consistently, Krishna says, Arjuna, get up and fight. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Tat Sat.